So, Mary Jo, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. I've told them so much about you, and I'm sorry. I don't know what happened there with our getting you on time and all that, but I apologize.
That's all right.
Listen, first off, this book, it was a 120-year collection of letters and photos from the family. How did you come about this discovering all of this stuff? Was it in an attic somewhere?
Yes, it was, in fact. We're lucky that my mother's family never threw anything away. And so when my grandmother died, my mother inherited this white wooden chest that was filled with the letters and the photographs and family memorabilia. And so my mom had put this chest up on a shelf in the closet while she raised her family. And then in 1992, I had a chance to do some work in Sacramento, California, and went to Placerville and found the family tombstones. And when I came back from that trip, I told my mom if she would get those letters out of that white chest, we could organize them and follow our ancestors' route and take a trip. And so that's what we did.
Well, I'll tell you, I've got so many questions to ask you because now this book actually traces the life and travel of your ancestors, and these are the Phillips family, right, from Vermont?
That's right.
And what was so unique about this family, and how far west did they actually travel before they decided to settle down?
Well, I think what was unique about them were two things. First is that family connection was very important to them, and they were determined to stay connected to each other across thousands of miles for multiple generations. The letters in the book cover a period of 1842 to 1962. It's very unusual to have that large a collection of letters. And the second,
yeah, go ahead.
The second thing that I think is unique is they were very entrepreneurial. You know, when they left Vermont, they didn't know what they would find, and so they came to Pennsylvania where they had a farm. And then they went to Kansas, Illinois, Colorado, and they ended in California. And they went there during the period of the gold rush. And out there, they saw lots of opportunities and were very entrepreneurial. They had boarding homes and hotels for miners at the Comstock Lode. And then when that faded, they had three resorts at Lake Tahoe.
You know, and thanks to them, you've got this fabulous book, because they had this strong desire, I guess, to keep connected with the families that they had left back east.
That's correct. They wrote back to their family in Vermont and stayed connected with the others who had stayed in Kansas, Illinois, and Colorado.
Tell me about Mary Phillips. She found this 6-week-old baby boy.
Yes.
And yeah, tell me about that one.
She was settled here in Pennsylvania, and one day she opened her door, and there on her doorstep was a 6-week-old baby boy. And there was a note attached that said, "I have to find work. I'll come back when I find it for my child." And the woman never did come back, and Mary raised this boy as her own and gave him their family's name. And sadly, he was ice skating on a pond when he was 12 years old, and he fell into a hole, and he drowned.
Oh, terrible. You know, now, there's another story in the book, J.W. Phillips, and I'm not too sure about Jane Ball Phillips, her first name.
Her name was Mehitable.
Mehitable. M-E-H-I-T-A-B-L-E. Mehitable. And they're on a steamship. And they went through the Nicaragua route, crossing through the Panama, I guess, going to San Francisco. And this is 1852. Listen to this, listener. Why did she divorce her first husband?
She divorced her first husband because it turned out that he was a Southern sympathizer in the Civil War, and she was a Yankee. And so she said she would have none of that. Got a divorce, and took back her maiden name, all at a time when that just wasn't done.
Boy, I'll tell you. what would you say were some of the common concerns of those traveling west during that time? I would assume sickness and Indians had to be up in the top 10.
Yes, they were. It's sickness and Indians along with the weather and finding work. So I could tell you a few stories about some of those.
Yeah,
some of
go
those.
Ahead.
In the Kansas, there's a letter that talks about actually the insects that they had, farmers had to deal with. And the letter says, Kansas ain't much of a place as people say it is. If there was nothing to trouble people but them Indians, then we could live here. The first thing that came was them great big worms, and they very near ate up all the potatoes. And when they left, the bugs came, and they ate what they wanted and left the rest for us. They kept me and Leafy in the potato patch all day finding worms. You bet we smashed the livers out of them. There's nothing in Kansas but grasshoppers and Indians.
Smash the livers out of them. Boy, that's a... Yeah, you could, you know, the Humane Society wouldn't get on you too much. That didn't sound too bad. Smash the livers out of them, yeah. Is that one of your favorite letters, or do you have a couple of other favorite letters?
Well, I do have a most favorite letter, and this was written by Mary Phillips when she was in California to her children back here in western Pennsylvania. And she's talking about a trip that the family took from Lake Tahoe to Placerville, which was a distance of 60 miles. It took them 4 days because of the pouring rain. And the letter begins, "We left this land of sleet and snow Friday, the 25th of October, and arrived at the land of sunshine and flowers on Tuesday, the 29th. We started in such a hurry, we forgot our candles and provisions, except for a few baked beans and some fried bear meat. In a strange place, in the dark, trying to get something to eat, you can imagine how we looked. Bade would light a stick from the fire outside. By the time she got it, it would be out. I stumbled on a can of lard and told Bade we'd have light. I took a piece of cloth off an old apron I had on and tied a stone in and put it in a pan of lard and set fire to it. Bade said the light of it would make an electric light ashamed of itself." And then she writes, "Jim was driving a spring wagon with a box hitched on behind with a black pig in it weighing 150 pounds. Above that was a coop of chickens. On top of that was our can of lard, packed meats, carpets, rugs, and a little bit of everything. They put the calf in with the pig. We watched the calf and the pig. Sometimes the calf would be under the pig, and then we'd have to call Jim, and he'd get out and fix them up." So what's remarkable about this is it's pouring rain, it's taking them 4 days to go such a short distance, and they write that they laughed so hard their sides hurt. It was the most fun they'd had in a long time, and at the end, my grandmother, great-grandmother wrote, "I like it here." And I like that letter so much because I think it shows how important their connection was to each other.
Uh-huh.
So even in spite of miserable conditions, they still really had a good time together.
And, you know, it is amazing when they talk about how much fun it was watching that. When you think about today's generation, you know, and you know, our youngsters today, they're fabulous, they're great. But you listen to these letters that are written, and you think about the kids texting today, right? Could you imagine what that would look like if they were texting? Oh my goodness! You know,
it would be about very different things.
Oh, it'd be about a half a paragraph, and it would. Oh, I'm not going to tell you about the pig. You know, that'd be boring. And yeah, we finally got some rain. You know, I mean, it's amazing how letters were so important. You know, you didn't have the TV to distract you and the video games, and that's why the families, pardon me, were so close. I was going to ask you. Yeah, 1870, all right, in the letters. They talk about being bled and cupped by the nearest doctor. Explain that, and what in the world did Obamacare cover that?
That was a very popular medical treatment at that time for many different things. And so there were different ways that you could be bled and cupped, and some were more dangerous than another. Uh-huh. The most dangerous was when they would cut open a vein and catch the blood in a bowl. So you can imagine the danger would be you could lose too much blood or infection or scarring. So other techniques that were less extreme were things like using leeches or cupping. Yeah. And cupping would be when you would take a glass cup and put it on the skin and allow it to cool for a while. And then when you went to pull it off, there would be a vacuum. And when the glass was pulled from the skin, that area would bleed. And then another would be where they would make some cuts into the skin, not so deep, that veins were opened, and they would bleed that way. Or they would use leeches, especially with children. So I'm glad that we don't have that practice anymore.
But, you know, the amazing thing is that a year or so ago, I was reading about where some doctors were using leeches.
Mm-hmm.
To go in and get rid of something that normally would require surgery. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I was thinking about way back, you know, in the 1800s, and here we are, you know, I think it was 2013 when I read this, you know, and I'm thinking, well, boy, they knew what they were doing back there sometimes.
Well, it was kind of interesting. There were some very common diseases at that time, like the ague fever, or quinsy, which was a throat infection. They also had to deal with typhoid, diphtheria, and tuberculosis.
Boy.
And what they often did was doctor with someone. And this family used Dr. S.S. Fitch, who was a New York physician. And my understanding is that he would send them a list of common symptoms, and they would fill it out like a checklist and send it back to them. And then he had a series of patent medicines.
You know what that is, right, Mary? That was the first form of Googling. And they Google something. They didn't even realize it. You tell them what's wrong with you, and you write it on the letter, and then the doctor, and no telling how long it took, to get there and to come back, right?
Well, that's right. And so they would pay a monthly fee for his services.
Boy,
yeah,
and I never knew that.
They talked in the letters about different doctors and who they would trust and who they wouldn't. Now, if it was an extreme case, there were doctors in the area that they would send for.
Boy, I'll tell you, everyone is so fortunate that this family, and it's the Phillips family, 120-year collection letters, photographs from the family, and you've got pictures. We're going to talk about the pictures in just a moment. We got to take a break. The name of the book is Write If You Live to Get There. Write If You Live to Get There. And that's the website, writeifyoulivetogetthere.com. Mary Jo Sontag, co-author of the book, will be right back. My guest, Mary Jo Sontag, S-O-N-N-T-A-G, and she is the co-author, along with her sister, Mary Kay, and the book is Write If You Live to Get There.
It's my mom that wrote the book with me.
Oh, your mom. Okay. Yes. I wonder where I got the information it was your sister. Oh, well, I'll be darned. There's another mystique I'll have to add to my list today. Speaking of, you know, mom and sisters and things like that, do you think that you inherited any of their pioneering traits from any of these people, reading their letters and things?
Well, this family was very, especially the women, because they were the entrepreneurs in the family. They were very adventuresome and resilient and enterprising women. And I do think that I inherited their energy, their sense of adventure, and especially their love of cooking and entertaining.
And I haven't got a copy of the book, so, you know, I fly blind on some of this stuff, but I got to ask you about the photos in the book. Do you have an estimate of about how many there are?
There's about 47 pictures in the book, and some of them, like the very first picture, is of the log cabin that my great-great-grandmother and her husband built when they came here from Vermont. There's also pictures of the resort at Phillips Station, And when we think about resorts, you know, we're thinking about golf courses and spas. But this mm-hmm. was really a camping resort where people would live in platform tents all summer. There were some permanent buildings like the dining hall. And then other pictures are of different family members. And there are a couple that I would like to talk to you about. The okay. first one is Mehitable Jane. She was the matriarch of the family.
One that divorced her husband, yeah.
Yes. Well, she was really quite a character. And when they first moved to Phillips, they lived in a little one-room log cabin. And one morning, she awoke to see Indian heads staring in her window. And
yeah.
the story goes that she quickly threw on something and went outside. And with that, the Indians scattered off. She motioned to them to return, and very hesitantly they did because they could see that she wasn't going to harm them. And uh-huh. she patiently explained with head shaking, hand motions, and pointing that it wasn't polite to peer in the windows, at least not that early in the morning.
And that was 1859.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other woman that I really admire is called Sierra Nevada Phillips. They called her Bade for short. She was named after the mountains that her parents loved so much. Actually, Mehitable Jane was her mother. And Sierra Nevada ran the resorts at Lake Tahoe. And it's said that she greeted everyone with a joke and sent them away with a smile.
Boy.
And if she had a fault, it was her over-generous heart. She was
Sierra
known
Nevada.
As, she was known as the best cook in the Sierras. And even though it was so early and so rough out there in the wilderness, she served everybody on linen tablecloths and china.
Boy, I'll tell you, what a book. You know, I got to get a copy of this. Write If You Live to Get There. Mary Jo Sontag, and she is the co-author with her mother, I got it now, Mary Kay. And I certainly appreciate your visit today, and what a book it is. And if you want to get a copy, listeners, go to the website, writeifyoulivetogetthere.com. Thank you very much, Mary Jo.
You're welcome.
All right. Hey, and thank you. And tomorrow, Michael Chapman, Elaine George, that's Dr. Elaine George, Ryan Morrow, and Marita Noon. And thank you very much for listening, and slower traffic, keep to the right.